These bandanas make it hurt. Welcome to the Breaking Down the Bytes podcast. Interested in the IT field and looking for a way to break in? Are you a college student or looking for a career change? The IT industry is booming and has tons of opportunity. It's vast, complex, and can be overwhelming, but we can help. Come along as we break down some of the barriers as your insider to the tech industry.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this week's edition of Breaking Down the Bytes. As usual, I'm your host, Pat. You can find me on Twitter, Layer8Packet. That's the number 8. Kyle is off again this week. Some schedules have been rearranged, and it's hard to get everybody in the room. But he is on Twitter at Danith256. Find the show on Twitter at Breaking Bytes Pod. All of our social links are in the show notes if you care to follow us on your platform of choice. We are pretty active on Twitter and LinkedIn, so come say hello if you would choose to. So, Alex, you're back with me again. What's up, man? How you doing?
Well, getting ready to move.
It's always good.
Thing in my life right now. So out of an apartment into a house. And actually, it's a good segue into talking about the subject today, because it's probably a terrible time to do this. So yeah, so when you're considering a move to a house, you probably don't want to talk about potential layoffs, tech layoffs, and all job security concerns. But that's the topic today, and that's what I'm ready to talk.
That is the topic for today. So we figured I'll try to do this like once a month, more of like a in the news, fresh and new kind of deal. See how this goes for us, take a current topic and kind of break it down, dissect it, whatever you want to call it. So this is our first crack at that. So we're going to try and do it some justice as far as from a real world scenario, real time in the news topic. So the big one, obviously, from the last couple of months, I would probably say from the second half of the year on, is tech layoffs. And there's a lot of them going on. That is for sure. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk about the elephant in the room, Twitter. Obviously, that's been hot and heavy in the press in the last couple of weeks. Depending on what side of the fence you sit on, you could be happy or sad about said news. So we're going to talk about that, try to play some devil's advocate with that and break that down and kind of give it a fresh pair of eyes, and then follow it up with, okay, your company is doing layoffs. If you find yourself in that situation, what can you do to kind of weather that storm or stick out or prove your value and pick whatever phrase you'd like to. We're going to try to talk about that and give you some pointers on how to do that and weather the storm. So here we go. Layoffs. We'll start there. The tech layoffs have kind of been, I don't say coming for a while. I think as fast as tech moves, there's always some sort of break that they pull the emergency brake and it comes to a screeching halt. Now, whether they overhired in a time of boom and now they just don't need all those people, whether the company has been bought out by a bigger company, right? So a couple of years back, Instagram was bought out by Facebook, et cetera, use whatever example you want. So when a company's bought out, there's a lot of redundancy there, or it could be just for poor performance, right? They didn't hit their marks, or things aren't going as well as they forecasted, planned, whatever, and they got to cut some weight. So there's various reasons for layoffs. But I think in the tech sector, I think a lot of overhiring is probably a fair shake, because when they're booming and they go off and they hire all these people, and then when the minute some turbulence comes and they go, oh, we have six people that do the same job, we got to start cutting. Now, actually, you're a little closer to the big tech sector than I am. I'm more in the financial sector where I'm at now. But you have any thoughts on that, or am I way off, or bring me back to reality? What's going on here?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. From what I've seen, it's just like anything that goes up has to come down. I guess that's the pessimistic way to look at it. But something that goes up so rapidly has to come back down. It has to be the amount of growth that some of these companies have had in big tech. I don't think people appreciate how much they've grown and how quickly. I think that's part of it. We've had like an unheard, anyone who's in the stock market knows this too. We've had an unbelievable run. I mean, the past decade has been absolutely insane for the economy, and recessions aren't new, but I think for a lot of people in the workforce today, I mean, really anyone who's out of college to early 30s probably has only ever seen a good economy. So I think this is something that's really taking people back. I mean, we have to really have to go back to what, 2008, the housing market crash. I mean, that's what are we talking? That's 14 years ago. So you're talking about, if you're not mid 30s, you probably deal with this yet. I don't think it's anything to be too concerned about. I think this is just something that everyone's going to experience a few times in their life. And yeah, like you mentioned in the intro, Twitter is kind of all over the news right now. And I think that's getting a lot of the press, but Facebook got some press too, but it's really across the board. If you look at big tech, it's almost, you're almost in the minority if you didn't have some type of hiring freeze or just straight up layoffs. And anyone who remembers the first time that I came on the show, I talked about it because I had been laid off PlayStation. Shut down the entire team. So it's something that I'm more than familiar with. And even at Evolve IP, I left because of layoffs. I wasn't part of those layoffs, but I left because there had been two rounds of layoffs. So you grow too fast and you got to come back to reality. And that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, I think there's been a major bubble in the last, like you said, years. And 2008 was the last one that we've sort of had with recessions and housing market bubbles. And I was at the local cable company I was a tech support rep. So I was sort of shielded from a lot of that. I was early 20s and whatever, but my career didn't really start until after 2008, and sort of it was recovered by that time when I started to really kind of put my foot in the ground and start climbing the rungs of the ladder. But yeah, now the economy has been good. You hear the term house of cards. It's mm-hmm. built on a house of cards, and the money's been cheap for how long, and people just lend and spend. And here we are. So everything that's up has to come down at least a little bit, at least back down to earth. And I don't know where everyone else is, but the housing market here has been super booming the last couple of years, and they've started to come down, but it's not where it's advantageous to really like buy. You know what I mean? Like if you had a second house now, you could sell and be okay. But if you're swapping houses, right, going out of one and into another, it's still not quite the time. So I feel like that's a lot of places, you know, now. So this all is very cyclical, and it's tied to the economy. It's tied to the things that go and things make things go. And it's just a sign of the times. But yeah, I mean, just today, outside the tech sector, right, just today, Walmart and CNN became the latest to announce layoffs. And I know CNN's had some top exec changes over the last couple of months, and try not to get too into the political waters, but it does seem that politics drives a lot of everything these days, and it's hard to stay out of. But there's been some regime change to CNN, and they've just been shedding weight, and then have companies that have really downsized, right? Meta or Facebook or Twitter, we talked about Lyft, Stripe,
Coinbase, Netflix, Robinhood,
Carvana, Roku. I mean, there's you name it. They've basically been on a downturn, and it's just we're part of this big tech bubble, and that's just the part of the storm we're in at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. And I know it's a negative topic, and for anyone who hasn't gone through it before, I know this could be kind of a scary time. But one thing that I think will make people feel better if they're in this state where they're maybe even depressed, they're just so scared they can't think of anything else, to put it in perspective, and I'll just use Meta as an example, and I'm sure you can look at all these big tech companies and find similar things. Everyone is kind of focused on right now, using Meta as an example, I think they laid off 15%. That's a big number. To put that in perspective, from 2015 to 2022, just before the layoffs, they had increased their staff by 600%. So you're talking about in 7 years, you increase your staff by 600% and then you drop it 15%. I mean, that just shows you, it's like, hey,
you're still ahead of the curve.
So they started with 12,000 or so employees in 2015, made it all the way up to 7,000. Now they're down to 7,000. If you look at it 20 years from now, you're still going to see that it went up 60,000 plus people over the course of 7 years. So even though it seems scary right now, I hope people realize that this is just something that happens. And because it's almost inevitable if you're going to be in the fields for 20 or 30 years, I think one of the things that we'll talk about probably after we talk about Twitter, because that's just a hot topic and interested to hear your thoughts on it, is we'll talk about what you can do in order to kind of prepare for potentially a layoff. Maybe you've already heard that there's going to be layoffs and you don't know what to do. I know that can be an unfortunate situation. So maybe we can talk about what we think the best tips are for that. I know I have a few.
Yep.
But yeah, as I said, before we get to that, I guess we have to talk about Twitter.
Yeah, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts on it as well. I think Twitter has been good and bad. And for whatever your opinions on Elon Musk, for me, he does more good than bad, but he's not
all right.
Perfect
angel. He's by any chance. The fans.
Yeah, here we go. Who knows? My boss loves him, by the way. My boss can't stop talking about Elon. He's the Neuralink and the Tesla and the space. You get him going. He won't stop. Shout out to him. But I don't know. Twitter was, let me put it this way. When it first started back in whenever it started, I don't have the year on me, but when it was hot and new and fresh, like it was literally a way to communicate with people in real time. So there was a lot of good there as far as real time news and journalists on the ground covering whatever story or just anybody really. Hey, this is going on outside my window right now or whatever. And it was unprecedented to have real conversations or real time news just hit your feed. And I originally started a Twitter account. I just don't take myself too seriously. I really don't think I'm not important enough to people to have people care about what the hell I think. So I had it it was more for me to follow people than for me to actually tweet and do whatever. So originally it started for me for a lot of my favorite like sports teams, beat writers mm-hmm. that had the inside to the teams that I follow, things of that nature, and some tech things. I used to follow like TechCrunch and some of the bigger, The Verge, some of the bigger publications out there. And that's right. Adam Schefter. That's right.
You got to find out who's been traded.
That's right.
The trade that's deadline. Right.
And my fantasy football tips and whatnot which the league that we're in, Alex, I'm not doing so. I won this week against Paige, but I'm not doing so well overall. Let's put it down. But anyway, so like I was doing that. I was using Twitter for that. And then I kind of fell out of it for a while. I was just like, whatever. And now because of the show, I do all the social media. So I've been kind of back in the Twitter game for a year plus now since the show started. So I'm seeing a little bit more of it and whatnot. And so it's good and bad. There's a lot of noise out there. So you try to filter a lot of the noise. And there was some talks about some bias that Twitter had built in and this, that, and the next. And like I said, whatever your opinions on it, fine. But then Elon came and said, we're gonna buy this. And I don't know. I think Elon has good intentions with it. Early on, I think he's kind of shooting from the hip as far as what he wants to do with Twitter. It feels a little loosey-goosey, if you will. Like It feels like he's a one-man tech support at this point. Like he's doing all kinds of polls and should we do this and should we do that and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, okay.
I do think that's interesting.
But the other thing I will say is I feel like everybody made a big deal about, he fired half the staff or whatever the percentage of the staff he fired. It's like, oh my God, is Twitter going to be here in the morning and blah, blah, blah. First of all, I'm like, listen, Twitter is great, but it's not a real place. Like, you kind of like put it into perspective that Twitter is not a real place, first of all. And number two, it's proven that like Twitter was still alive in the morning. It was running and he did what he had to do and he had the people that he had. So it's like, so you ask yourself, all right, were those people that were fired? And I'm not taking their firing lightly. I think it's terrible to lose a job, but it's like, were they necessary in the first place? Were they dead weight because it can go on without them? Whatever the number is, it's irrelevant. Can it go on without him? Yes or no? If it's a yes, then they were dead weight. I don't even jump in there.
Well, maybe their worth isn't known right away. I think that people that are keeping the lights on, it's a little more, it's simpler to quantify their worth versus someone who's making the platform better or, but yeah, I think it all goes back to it is a business. And I'm sure we don't have all the facts here and maybe we never will, but I mean, from everything I heard that they were just bleeding money so much and it just seems if you are losing, what, $4 million a day?
Something like that.
And you have 7,000 people on staff that, man, I don't want to call it redundant jobs, but if someone, if you have a team of software engineers and literally at a company like Twitter, do you have 1,000 of them? I mean, I'm sure they do all kinds of different things, but
sure,
you might have 50 people with a really similar skill set and a lot of random sets of 50 people with similar skill sets, if that makes sense. And it just seems if you are making a conscious effort to, hey, we got to slow down, we got to be profitable, it just seems like it just makes sense. And people are just up in arms. I mean, and it kind of surprised me. Since we do live in America, you're not going to be kicked out with nothing. So I think, what, legally they got to get, I think it's 2 months legally. Yeah, and people are given 3 months.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And if I have those numbers wrong, I'm sorry, but it's not, it's substantial. I mean, it's at least 60 days that they got, or it might be 90, but either way, even if it's 60 days, the idea that you got 2 months to find a new job. And I know that's, some people are going to be like, well, you're missing the point, and 2 months, that's not enough time. But I still feel it happens. And I think we should be thankful that we live in a place where at least that's what happens. I mean, when I left PlayStation, yeah, sure, I was bummed out that I was laid off. I mean, I moved across the country for PlayStation, but I was given several months severance, similar to what people got at Twitter.
Right.
And I kind of feel like if you can't get a job within a few months, maybe you really were dead weight. I mean, I found a job pretty quickly.
Right.
And
especially out there where you're at, Silicon Valley, like it seems to be like, again, and I know they're on the downtrot and people are trying, our companies are tightening their belts, but yeah, it, 3 months to, let's just say three months to find something where you, where like people are in that culture every day. Like you can't tell me people at Twitter that were laid off don't know other people and high execs, or, you know what I mean? It, depending on your level at Twitter, that you don't know other people in the same boat as you or the same circles as you. And it's like, oh yeah. Oh, cause you and I both know, Alex, it's all about networking in this industry. No pun intended, since we're network guys, but it's all about who you know. And 80% of the people that have a job out there is because a friend recommended them. Don't take that literally, but it's just a figure of speech. But, you know, it's about who you know at this point. And especially in Silicon Valley, that seems to be a very large, small community, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's something that I probably didn't think about, too. It's just Twitter had certainly had a name around it. So they're going to be better equipped for finding jobs than most people.
Sure.
And yeah, I just think people are just, I don't want this to turn into overly political, but yeah, I think people just get overly sensitive and they just want things handed to them on a silver platter. And there was one thing that I saw on LinkedIn and it just, it blew my mind that this person posted it. What blew my mind even more was how much support this person got in the comments section.
Yeah.
And man, am I just in the minority with how I'm thinking? But what the situation was, it was a laid off Twitter employee who was requesting help from his network and finding a new position, which is fine. But he also was really pushing on how terrible his situation was and really pushing on how unfair, I think he used the term unfair and ridiculous, a lot of synonyms to that effect. But this was this person's situation.
Okay.
This is the person that thinks they were mistreated. Okay. This was either a junior, don't know if he was a junior, but based on the number of years of experience he had, it was kind of like his first tech job or first big one anyway. So software engineer. First off the get-go is, in all likelihood, you're not very unique. You don't have a very unique skill set. You have an in-demand skill set, but not a unique one. So right. In all likelihood, there are going to be people with your skill set.
Sure.
He had been with the company 7 months. All right. So there's one thing.
That long.
okay, there's going to be people there than 5-6 years. I got to lay somebody off. You don't have the seniority thing. And then the super kicker.
I'm ready.
He was on parental leave.
Nice.
For 2 months prior to the layoffs. So you're saying that you put 5 months in, two of which you've been on parental leave, paid parental leave, right, and now you're getting 3 months severance.
Right.
And you feel like you're the victim. And this is your first job.
Right.
So what more do you want?
Right.
And it's just, and like I said, I just couldn't believe this person was posting it. And then this, the flood of support they get this. Like, I get it. You're on parental leave, but it's great to be. And I don't blame him for taking the parental leave. If it was offered to me, I would. That's fine. But again, if there's layoffs,
don't be shocked.
I'm just assuming that I'm going to be laid off at this point.
Sure.
Because
you have to prepare for the worst, right?
I mean, I'm the new guy. I don't have a very, replaceable skill set, and I'm not even working to begin with.
Right. No, I'm with you. Yeah, that seems a little odd. The other thing too, like you mentioned that Twitter was bleeding X amount of money per day or whatever. And then he's like, all right, the paid lunches stop yesterday. And people were like, oh my God, what am I going to eat? I'm like, brown paper bag it like the rest of the world does. Like it's the end of the world. And maybe that's the custom out there that us Pennsylvania boys just aren't used to. But it just seems to be like there's bigger problems than you have to pack in your own lunch. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and Twitter was one of the higher paying companies out there.
Sure.
So go buy your own lunch. And
right. That seems a little odd.
And I know he comes off as being so blunt, but I think people forget that this working from home, that is relatively new.
New, yeah.
I think across the board, even though I don't think we're going to go back to the office full time anytime soon, I do feel like we are seriously starting to shift to the point where people are pushing it more and more now. So when he came out and said you had to be in the office, and if you can't be in the office, you need to come up with a reason. So for anyone who is full-time remote and nowhere near an office, I can see why that would be tough. But again, I kind of saw that on LinkedIn where people were really complaining about coming into the office and the headquarters in San Francisco, and I could see that they live in San Francisco. I mean, you're close.
Right.
I mean, is that really a deal breaker? And
right.
I understand. But even if it came out of nowhere.
Right. You get used to something, and then somebody tries to take it away, and they're going to be the villain.
Right, for sure.
Just is what it is.
Now, if you're hired as a full-time remote employee and you work in out of Pennsylvania, okay, that's a little different.
Right.
But if you're hired as an on-site employee, then because of COVID, you slowly transition to a full-time employee, and now you're given the ultimatum. Yeah, it's a slap in the face. I get it, but it almost feels like, okay, there are worse things a guy can ask for in these type of positions. So, yeah, that's not something that really bothered me that much. I think I'm probably in the minority of people when I say that I like working in the office. I do see the benefit of it. I don't think it's a means of babysitting people, which is oftentimes I think the argument people get is like, well, you don't trust me to do my work.
Right.
And I think realistically people know it's different. You can be an extrovert, a great communicator. It's just not the same. Talking to people face to face, being able to go out to lunch with people, it's just different. It really is. And I think that is something that's missing. I do think companies could benefit from it. So I can see where he's getting at. I think he really takes it to an extreme, making it a mandate.
Sure.
And kind of just completely doing a 360 in one day's time. I think maybe baby steps would be a little bit better.
Yeah, that's what I said. I feel like he's got some good ideas. He talks about Twitter 2.0 and all that jazz, but it just feels like at some decisions, he's kind of shooting from the hip, that kind of thing. Or like over the suspended accounts that Twitter has suspended over the last however many years for some of the controversial figures. And like he put out a poll the other day, was like, should there be amnesty for suspended accounts? And it was like a Twitter poll. I'm like, wait, you're gonna base your decision on a Twitter poll? That seems a little shoot from the hip-ish. But like, and then of course bought Twitter, and now he's got his hands in it, and he's got it on the reins. So then all the people come out of the woodwork of how he's this and how he's that, and he's terrible, and he's a slave driver, and he's gonna make people work 80 hours a week, and all this other. And I'm thinking to myself, well, he's already running two other companies. He said he's owned multiple, but he's currently running that being SpaceX and Tesla. And now he's got Twitter. He was with PayPal and that kind of thing. And you never heard any of that before this. So you have to wonder, like, how much of this is hyperbole and versus how much is it actually like, is he an actual slave driver and that kind of thing? So it's like you have really smart people that work for SpaceX. You have really smart people that work for Tesla and do all this stuff. And you really don't hear any of that unless he's that good at keeping it under wraps. I don't know. Maybe he's some sort of wizard that I don't know. It just seems odd that now, you know, the bullets are flying when he's bought a major social media platform that people are accustomed to being the way it is. I don't know if that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, I feel like he deserves a bit benefit of the doubt. This isn't a guy who inherited money and decided to buy a social media platform because he was bored. I mean, this guy has started up companies time and time again to massive success. So I kind of feel like, okay, his means are a little unusual and extreme, but I'm going to reserve my final say until I see a little bit more.
Yep.
As of right now, I don't think he's done anything yet that makes me feel like Twitter is in a terrible place. And I don't think he's done anything yet that makes me feel like he's some warmonger, which is what people are making him out to be. I mean, I think the layoffs could have been handled better for sure. I mean, anyone that comes in and the first thing they do is lay off half the company. I would love to know more information about how those decisions were made, because it seems like, man, that was done quickly. I mean, do you just go in and go to the director level guys and say, you got to lay off half your reports, get back to me with who's sticking around? I would like to know that. Maybe we'll get more info on that as time comes. And maybe there's some out there that I just haven't read yet. I'm interested.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that goes. And you know, for those of you that sort of in tune to that, I guess, and I don't know, Alex, you may edit this out depending on how this comes off, but Saturday night, the famous or infamous, no matter which, I guess, which way you look at it, Twitter files came out, showed the links between certain political parties and suppressing of info and favoritism and things of that nature. So I think he's got a large task ahead of him trying to sort of clean some of that up. Just seems to me that it just seems to me that Twitter was this hyperbole of everyone talking into an echo chamber. And now Elon Musk is not the echo chamber. And now people are upset that voices outside the regular echo chamber of old guard Twitter are now allowed to speak and be on the platform. And now everybody's trying to move to Mastodon, which I'm like, can't handle another social media account. This is bananas. And stick with the ones I.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't envy his position. It's a tough situation to be in because he keeps talking about he wants a free speech platform. And I don't want this to turn into political. We'll move on to the topic soon. But the whole idea, if it's a free, where do you blur the line between free speech and just unnecessary speech? And how do you filter that if you want to allow free speech? Can you really have a platform that has no censor? I mean, can you really, who determines what gets censored? I mean, seems like you got to have a team then that's like politically diverse. It's tough.
It's a mess.
It's
an absolute mess.
I don't
necessarily think that. Yeah. And of course, people want to say, oh, well, hate speech is not free speech. And it's like, well, okay, you're going to say that. But then, like you said, Alex, who gets to decide what's free speech and what's not? Like, that's all down to discretion, right? That's personal discretion. So if someone leans to the left or to the right, that's going to have their bias come into the play of who can speak freely and who can't. So that, Yeah, I don't envy him at all. I think he's got a big job ahead of him.
Like, should we block flat earthers because they have a million followers? You know,
right.
Like Taylor Swift right. just comes out and says, oh, by the way, flat earth.
That's right.
What do we do?
Let me just say, speaking of Taylor Swift, let me just say that a couple weeks ago when she broke Ticketmaster because of her sales, like literally she broke it on a Friday, and on Monday or Tuesday, she had the freaking Department of Justice looking into breaking up Twitter, breaking up Ticketmaster. Like, what kind of power do you got to have to get the Fed to be like, you know what, this is too big of a monopoly. Let's see if we could break this up. That's some Taylor Swift leverage right there. But anyway, side note. But no, don't envy Elon. I do think he's taking it in the right direction. I think some of his decisions and how he's sort of what he's made seem a little impulsive. I'm hoping that in the next couple of weeks, he can get a team around him that can sort of level him off a little bit. That guy tweets constantly. Like, he doesn't sleep. Like, honestly, you could literally roll through his Twitter profile and be like, he could read for hours. And it's just like, wow, all these tweets are 3.5 minutes apart. What? Holy God, this guy tweets a lot. So, no, I do think he's taking in the right direction. I'm hoping he gets a team around him that levels him off a little bit and see what Twitter 2.0 can be. And people that don't agree with it or whatever, then, you know, the platforms, you're free to not use the platform. It just is what it is. And that's why people don't use Facebook. They don't use whatever, Parler, whatever. It's just your freedom to do or not do so. But, you know, for me personally, I think the old guard Twitter was a little odd because, I mean, you have to look at it in this respect too. Like, Twitter was literally the town square, the public square. So you're going to ban people from having a seat at the town square because you didn't agree with their ideologies? That just seems a little, let's put it down, seems a little odd and echo chamberish. So we'll leave it at that. But yeah, we'll see what Elon does. And I do find it interesting that he fired all those people. And I guarantee you, those people got in their Teslas and drove home. Like,
yeah, how many fired Twitter employees drive Teslas? Yeah.
I feel like that's a little,
kicking the
private parts, if you will. So it's interesting. So now, all that being said, to wrap it back into, how do you survive some of these layoffs? Like, some you see coming, some you really don't. Some aren't technically layoffs. They're more of like writings on the walls. And I'll give you my example. I have never been laid off from a job. I saw some writing on the wall that I left before they got to me, because this management changes, but there technically wasn't a layoff. So how do you look for that? How do you kind of A, see it coming, or at least feel it in the air, versus, okay, it's in the air, it's in your face. What are you doing to stay sane about it? And what's some checkmark lists?
All right. So I guess we can start with how to see it coming.
Yeah.
I guess it's pretty obvious. The economy plays a big part. I mean, if we're getting ready to go into recession, I think you should probably consider it a possibility. Recession means people are spending less, and then you can kind of make an educated guess as to whether or not your company is going to be something that people can get. If you're in the entertainment business and it's something that your money comes from people spending extra money, and now they're going to have less extra money. Okay. Writing's on the wall. I think as an engineer, it should be pretty obvious if your workload's starting to get cut down a little bit. The huge red flag that I always see is you're working on a project, for however long, and then all of a sudden that project stops because there's no money for it anymore. Yep. Oh, that's a scary one. Yeah, I never like seeing that. Or someone leaves and then they'll get backfilled.
Yep.
I mean, that's another one. And maybe there's some others that I haven't thought of, but you know, those are the big ones that I can think of. What else you want to add to that?
No, I think those are the big ones, especially the money part. With you've been so focused on a project, and all of a sudden the boss says, "Ah, hold off on that."
Screech. Or like any way you could do this cheaper.
Right.
In regards to the World Cup that just went on, that's a red card right there.
Anyway, you can optimize cost efficiency.
That's right. Can you give me the Porsche performance on a Yugo budget? Yugo,
have
no.
Have we ever considered gray market? Do we clown really need maintenance support on this?
How important is maintenance? You're an IT guy, right? Just figure it out. Oh, okay. I've been there. Yep, I've been there. If it plugs into a wall, IT is responsible for it. You're like, ooh, actually, let's talk about that. Oh, yeah, those are the big ones. Yeah, it's just so interesting to me that speaking of money, there's never enough money to do it right the first time, but there's always enough money to do it twice. I've had that before, where it's just god-awful planning. And it's just like, oh, God, this is terrible. But no, the big projects are a flyer of these. If these halt, kind of stay to yourself and look at that LinkedIn network you got going. See what happens.
I think those people have kind of a sixth sense for it too. I think you just feel it sometimes. Just, yep. Yeah, something's different. It's not the same.
Right. Yeah, the boss starts acting different. He gets a sense. He's like, okay. Yeah, that's an interesting one for sure. Yeah, I would say in that aspect of being prepared, right? Again, you can kind of feel it in the air, but you should always be professionally up to date, I should say, right? So that means LinkedIn. That means some sort of base resume, right? So always try to tailor your resume to the job you're applying for, right? And then so you should always have a base resume out there ready to go, and then you're just kind of filling in as you're applying the job, putting buzzwords in there or tailoring it to that particular job you're applying for, right? So that should always be done. And again, LinkedIn is your friend. Your social network on LinkedIn can be a very big asset to you on that, for sure. Being connected to those friends and associates and those friends of friends and the endless recruiters that seem to be out there on LinkedIn, and not knocking any of them, but some of them just shoot something out there in the breeze and hope somebody sticks. And most times than not, they don't. So we'll see what happens. And that being prepared, part of that comes with your financial situation as well. Could you live for the next, like you said, 3 months, 6 months, whatever it is, of not having a job? Some people can't, especially in times like now where recession is the word that we don't want to use, and inflation and all that stuff kind of playing havoc. Things are costing more, and just be prepared that you may have to dip into that 401 or whatever, 401k, or to pay those bills and keep afloat. So that's part of being prepared as well. I don't know if you had anything on that, Alan.
Well, I'll go back a little bit on what you said, because you mentioned about the writing being on the wall. And in this case, you kind of mentioned reaching out to your network. I think even before you do that, you might want to step back and kind of evaluate the situation, because I think you can fall into one of three categories. Either you do like the job and you want to ride the ship, and you just want to make sure if there is a cut, you're not part of it.
Yep.
Maybe you're on the second part, maybe you're just on the fence. And I think this is where maybe update your resume, maybe reach out to your network just to kind of get a feel, and just maybe not actively interviewing, but you're looking for the right opportunity. It's like if the perfect opportunity comes up, you're going to listen. And that might be the first time you've done that in a while. And then the third one is the writing's on the wall. You have no interest in being with this company anymore. And that's where you have to be pretty aggressive. Brush up on your skill set.
Sure.
Start actively interviewing. But going back to the first one, I think that's one that we probably skip over pretty quickly, is if there are uncertain times, but you love the company, you like what you do, and you just want to stick it out, I think there's plenty that you can do there. These are situations where I don't want to call it a game, but maybe it is a little bit. This is where I think you got to make yourself known a little bit. And that's not saying go out and highlight every single thing you do, but I think you might want to put a little bit more effort in kind of highlighting your worth. Maybe take the more visible projects, the things that people don't want to do. Maybe there's a bit more visibility into it. take that, look for problems, because that's as simple as it gets. Your problem solvers stick around, and maybe just look for some problems that were there, but no one's ever taken the time to go back and rectify. And especially if there's slower times, maybe you have the time to do that now. But I think that's something that people, rather than just kind of curling up into a ball and then just making yourself a candidate to be cut, I think take the aggressive route and try to prove to people why you should be there. And I think that's something that I'm not sure everyone does. And maybe that's not the first thing people think of when there are layoffs. I think they kind of jump to the, oh my, all right, let me start updating my resume when, hey, if you like the job, you like the company, fight for it for a bit.
Yeah.
And right. I think that's the advice I would get to some.
Yeah, I would say that as well. I also would say when layoffs are on the horizon and you sort of have multiple people feel it or your coworkers feel it, right? Those relationships that you have with those coworkers can get ugly pretty quick.
Right.
Especially when layoffs are around and it's sort of the cutthroat environment, who's going to get cut or whatever, or people's stress level go through the roof because they are at risk of getting cut, right? So I would say stay above that fray, if you will. I would say, because we go back to the office politics episode we had a couple months ago and trying to stay away from that, you know, that office gossip session, if you will, or negative conversations, things of that nature. Discussing the upcoming cuts is only going to ramp up everyone's anxiety with that. And so the person you're talking smack about today, you might need a reference from tomorrow. So I would always try to temper on the side of just keep it professional. Y'all are in the same boat and lean on each other in the ways you can. What can you both do for each other that's a mutual benefit, and kind of go from there. But I would also mimic what you said as far as earning your keep sort of thing and letting your boss know about it, right? So doing the little things, devil's in the details, those sorts of things, documentation, anything that you can kind of do to get your hands dirty and focus on the things that others either A, didn't have time to, or B, didn't want to. Focusing on those things, and because more times than not, those are the things that get noticed when the details come out in the wash and say, oh yeah, Alex did this or Pat did that, and so maybe he's good to keep around at least for this round. And then, because that's a very round by round thing, mm-hmm. would think, right? So if you survived one round, that doesn't necessarily mean you're gonna survive the next one, right? So you have to take them in individual pieces. And I know, Alex, you've been through a few of these, so I don't know if that is that an accurate statement of each round of layoffs. It's its own thing, or are they loosely junked together with, okay, we're gonna let marketing go the first round, but engineering's the second.
Yeah, I've been through a few. And they've all been so different. I don't know if I can really categorize it and say what's the norm. So I've been through, you know, like my first IT job where just we were bought out and the entire IT staff was just replaced because we were a 100 person shop replaced by 10,000 plus company. We were just replaced.
Yep.
And then at Evolve IP, that had multiple rounds, and I don't even remember what the difference between the first and the second one is. All I know is just being kind of floored by who was let go in the second round and just really not understanding what's next. And I think that's the part that got me to leave. The first round of layoffs made a bit more sense to me. So I kind of thought, okay, well, this makes sense. These are people that weren't here long. These are people that were upper management, and new management has gone in. So it's just that comes with the territory.
Sure.
But then, yeah, the second round was just people that, in my eyes, were the people that I kind of thought were untouchable, the people that I kind of built the company and knew where all the skeletons were. So when that happened, that's when I didn't quite understand it anymore. And because I didn't understand it, I couldn't convince myself that I wasn't going to be part of round three, if there was a round three.
Sure.
And that's kind of why I left. I don't know what normal is. And you said you haven't been through one, so I guess you can't give an update on what your experience has been.
Like I said, I just, not necessarily a layoff, but I saw the writing on the wall where a company brought in another big shot from across the pond, and the guy from across the pond did not like my boss. The feeling was mutual. And then basically they give my boss the ultimatum and saying, look, we're either going to fire you or you walk away with diligence. And of course, the boss walked away with diligence. So once the boss was gone, I figured, well, you know, my team is not on the safest of places in the most solid ground. So I got moving as well. So not necessarily a layoff as far as I go, it's coming, but it was more of a, I got to get out of here before they get to me sort of deal. So I guess they have similarities, but they're not really in the same vein.
Okay.
And then the final example I had with PlayStation is that was just the complete blind side. So that might be similar to the Twitter thing. That was, and this is not to say anything negative about PlayStation. I still love the company. I really go in retrospect.
I just plugged mine in like literally 10 minutes ago. It's been unplugged for months because I didn't have a place to play it. It's on the TV behind me. Damn right I'm getting that new Call of Duty. Boy, let me tell you.
Yeah, I just downloaded a new God of War.
There you go.
Play that here shortly. But yeah, in that situation, like I said, I think maybe it was similar to the Twitter situation. Maybe not quite, because I guess when that whole thing was going down, they thought that might happen. But we were so out of the loop with this coming that we were actually interviewing a person for my team the day that the entire team got laid off.
No kidding. Wow.
So we were I wasted some people's time in the last few weeks.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's kind of crazy.
That was abrupt. It was very, that morning we got a message saying, hey, all hands on. Then a 30-second, you are no longer going to be employed. An hour later, we lose access to everything.
Yeah.
And I probably would prefer that, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Rip that bandaid off and get it out of the way. Just, for sure.
It's like, oh, okay. That's good.
Do that.
Yeah. And just let me know what my severance is, and thanks for your time.
That's it. Yeah, let me go, because I'm going to look for jobs later this afternoon. That's how it goes. Yeah, so that was kind of it. I know we kind of were all over the place, especially with the Twitter thing and the layoffs. But we wanted to at least bring it to people's attention. It's not the best topic. It's not the happiest topic, but I feel like we did need to give it.
Yeah, it's on everybody's loving mind.
Yeah, it is. About it just is what it is, and where we're at right now as a country, as an economy, and it's bound to happen. So we figured we would try to do it some justice and give our takes on it. So do you have anything else, Alex, to wrap it up? Or
I guess I'll reiterate again, anyone who hasn't gone through this before, this isn't new. Anyone again who's part of 08 and people that remember the dot-com boom and bust, and this has happened before and it'll happen again. Yeah, you just try to put yourself in the best position, grow some tough skin, and if you're unfortunate enough to be part of these layoffs, yeah, hopefully you glean something from this and can take something from it.
That's it. Yep, that's it. So we are going to get out of here, but before we do, I want to mention this time of year, one of my favorite websites, not that I get to do it a whole lot, but I think it's a really cool concept. TryHackMe.com has their 25 days of Christmas had a hackathon going on right now. So you do a lesson every day and it enters you for prizes and things of that nature. So if you're a cybersecurity folk that is trying to break in or just looking to grow your skills, tryhackme.com. It's got their Christmas 25 days hackathon going on right now that you can really compete for some cool prizes out there. So I'll throw that out there to everybody. The other thing I want to throw out there is a pat on the back to Alex, Kyle, and I. Pat myself on the back, and you guys do the same. We've officially reached 5,000 listens, 5,000 downloads for the show. And we started last September, Labor Day last year, and we missed a couple of episodes due to a second kid of mine coming in March, and we missed a couple of last couple of weeks to get some schedule stuff, so some schedule differences, but we've been pretty consistent over the year, and we hit 5,000 downloads or 5,000 listens, so we appreciate everybody
who's ever listened, who's ever taken the time to share the show and tell your friends about us. And we appreciate everybody. And we hope that you find some value in this show. And we enjoy doing it. And we've met some great people doing this show, some of the great content creators that you know, we're going to have on the show coming up shortly here as we get schedules ironed out here. But now we want to take a minute and say thanks, everybody, for the 5,000 listeners. I think it's a great number. And we're looking forward to the next 5,000. So well done.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So other than that, we'll get out of here. Again, thank you for joining us this week on the new episode of Breaking Down to Bytes. Again, our website's out there, breakingbytespod.io. You can subscribe to the show on your platform of choice up there. There's a subscribe button and it brings you to all kinds of links. So whatever show or whatever platform you listen on, we are there. Throw us a rating on iTunes. That's where most of our listens coming from. So you're already there. You might as well throw us a rating. That would be awesome. Again, tell a friend about the show. That would help us out too. Word of mouth is great. Follow us on, again, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Discord server is out there. And all that stuff is in the show notes. And then we also have the survey that's out there as well. So right around Christmas time through the new year, we like to have the survey thrown out there again to see what you guys like and don't like about the show. And it's completely anonymous. So we don't collect any info or anything like that. It's completely anonymous. So it just aggregates answers for us and just a couple of questions. I think there's like 9 or 10 multiple choice questions there. So go fill that out. That helps us with the show and really knowing our audience. So we appreciate that. And again, that show the link is in the show notes as well. So Alex, it's been great. Always fun time talking, and we'll see everybody next week.
All right. Talk to you then.
See ya.